Standout with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. Before we start tonight's show, I just want to give my condolences and say that my thoughts are with the Clifford family at this time. David and Paddy and Shelley, whose mum passed away, Ellen Clifford, recently. I just want to give my condolences and say that my thoughts are with the three of them and to their dad, Dermot. I know that the community of Fossa and Killarney and all around the county are behind them, so I just wanted to mention that before tonight's show to say that my thoughts are with them and may she rest in peace. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Standout with myself, Ian O'Connell, is the current Rosa Tralee, who is the Westmeath Rose, Rachel Duffy. Sit back and enjoy the show. Rachel, come here. Thanks a million for joining me today. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
You're all keeping well, we were saying there. You're flat out working.
Yeah, busy. I kind of thought after Christmas I'd kind of there'd be a bit of a decline in the interest people would have taken me. But in fairness, I've been kept very busy now, especially up here in the Midlands. So it's lovely. It's great.
You're enjoying it. I like to bring all my guests kind of back to the start, just to paint a picture of, I suppose, when you were younger. Do you want to give the listeners a quick, I suppose, background very quickly on your, I suppose, your childhood growing up? Was it in Rosemount you grew up, or are you living there now?
Yeah. So I'm Rosemount, born and bred. So I'm about 5 miles from Moat, and little village kind of out in the countryside. So I went to primary school in Rosemount and into Moat Community School for secondary school. And I went to college then in NUIG, but kind of I've always, I suppose, found my way back to Rosemount. So I'm living in Rosemount now at the minute. I'd spent a bit of time away. And I suppose there's a good 24 years worth of history between, you know, since I first arrived in Rosemount now. But God, I don't even know where to start. But what do you think I should start talking about?
I suppose growing up there, was it, because I heard in an interview you done, you were saying it's kind of like a tight-knit community. Did you play sports growing up? Was there a lot of sports in Rosemount?
Yeah, Rosemount, in fairness, is great. And anybody from around here, they'll always say the people of Rosemount are great. Great for supporting things, great for coming together, just really, really tight-knit. So, you know, I went to the primary school down below, and I don't even think there's 100 kids in the school, you know, so it's a very small school. Everybody knows everybody, and you know, if you don't know someone, you won't be long finding out who they are. Do you know that kind of a way? And I think when I was younger, that used to drive me mad, but I suppose now that I'm a bit older, I can totally appreciate it. So yeah, we've lived here in Rosemount. There's myself, my older sister, my older brother, my dad, and yeah, I suppose we'd be very active in the community. Like, we'd have all played football growing up, and I suppose we were always the kids who were kind of, if there was any sort of a charity thing happening or a Christmas concert, we were always the kids that were forced into the middle of it. That was the type of family we were, you know. But like, they're nice memories to have. And then I suppose when my mom got sick when she was only in her mid-30s, she got breast cancer. And, you know, we were very young. And I think it's only now, looking back, I realize how young we were.
Yeah.
And she was sick for about 18 months before she passed away when she was 39. So I realized more than ever at that stage, you know, how important it was to have your community. And it's, I guess, again, it's in hindsight when you do a bit of traveling and you see that not everywhere in the world is like Rosemount. I realized how lucky we were to have the support network that we had when Mammy passed away. And I suppose, like that again, my mom was hugely involved in our community, and she was always the first to support anything or be there for anyone who needed it. So when she passed away, like, she was a huge loss to everybody, not just to our family, to so many people. She was so well loved. So I suppose you could kind of say that our kind of picture perfect childhood sort of fell apart fairly quickly after we lost our mom. So I was 9 when my mom passed away, and my sister was 12, my brother was 15. So yeah, it was a it was all going well until then, I suppose, you know.
Until then, obviously, and I'll touch on that again in a minute. A good way of explaining to you, when I was in London, I suppose it was March, and I clearly know, I think it'd be similar enough to the community you're saying back home. I was going down the street, and always in Killarney, you know, you'd walk past someone, you'd just give them the nod and say how things are or whatever. Well, I passed this fella, and I forgot I was in London, and I just goes, how things? And I got a kind of look, and I was like, it's not like that all over the world. Would you say that'd be the same at home?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Like, and it's, I think, you know, when I was younger, I couldn't wait to get out of Rosemount. I was like, God, there's nothing happening here. I can't wait to get out. And I suppose now it's kind of like I come back and I realize that maybe kind of small town, maybe mentality in ways, like, I'm willing to take that for all the positives that comes with the having such a tight-knit community. You know, the positives totally outweigh the negatives of everybody knowing everything.
Absolutely. You said there, obviously, about your mom passing away. You were only 9 years of age. You said kind of travelling, I suppose it doesn't make it easier, but I suppose it kind of might take the mind off it for time to time. Do you think that when you were, I suppose, travelling, when she did pass away, you were looking at it through the eyes of a girl only 9 years of age, whereas now you're looking at it through the eyes of a young woman?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Like, I suppose I really, really struggled to come to terms with my mom passing away throughout my whole teenage years. And, you know, I would have really struggled with my mental health, and I still do. I struggle with anxiety quite a lot. But it was debilitating now when I was a teenager. Mm. And to the point where I could not even acknowledge my mom's death. I couldn't talk about it. I nearly just brushed over the fact, you know, like, it didn't happen. And it's, even when I went to college, it was the same. Like, I made friends in college, and I wouldn't even mention my mom. You know, I had a friend from college who came home with me one weekend, and I'd known her a few months at this stage, and she said that the moment she realized my mom wasn't in the picture was when she came to my house. And right. I'd never told her. And I think now I look back and I think, oh my God, that's shocking. But that was the extent to which I couldn't deal with it. And like that then, I suppose, I went to North Carolina for a semester of college in 2019. And then I went to Spain after the following semester. And I think that was a turning point for me, because like that, I realized all of a sudden, like, the world is so big. And I think I was away from the place that I kind of had associated so many negative memories with. And I don't know if it's American people or what, but, like, they always want to know your story. They want to know everything. Yeah. And, like, do you know what, though? It was actually the first time in my life where I could actually just talk about it, and nobody knew me or nobody had any kind of... It was kind of, I don't know, I feel like when I grew up at home, people always knew who we were, story. When I traveled, it was the first time nobody knew a thing about me, and it was really refreshing. And then but it was kind of, I suppose, an eye-opening moment for me as well, because I went all around the world, and all of a sudden I kind of felt my mom's presence in my life more than I ever did at home. And then when, I suppose, COVID hit, when I was in Spain and I had to come home, and all of a sudden then I was back in my childhood home, and I kind of had a moment where I realized, I have to deal with this. Like, yeah. I have to sort this out, because, you know, I'd be 40 years old and I still won't be able to talk about it. So in a way, even though COVID was hard and it was isolating, like, I kind of feel like it was probably a necessary evil for me, in terms of forcing me to kind of deal with a lot of stuff that I probably buried.
Puts everything into perspective, COVID, didn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Like, and I think even kind of maybe that's how Rose Tralee came about. Like, when I came home from Spain and I was here in lockdown in Rosemount, I remember thinking to myself, when this thing is all over, if I ever get let out, I'm putting my name down for everything. I'm going on every night out, and I'm not saying no to anything ever again. And it was tough, and it was really, really hard. But God, it really made us realize, you know, how short life is.
Yeah. And like you said, I think it was after you won the Rose of Tralee, was it in an interview with the Independent or something, you said that, you know, obviously your dad played a huge part in your life, with your mom passing away so early. Your sister, did she have a baby recently?
Yeah, well, my sister, he's my godchild, she had Dahi during COVID as well.
Do you think that kind of helped, knowing that your sister was now a mom?
Yeah, and I think, you know, like, it was really difficult too for my sister, like, you know, because we're both still young, like, and yeah. I suppose so close as sisters, and I guess my sister kind of always took that mothering role for me as well. Like, the first person I go to with anything is my sister.
Really? And,
you know, her having Dahi, like, it was difficult, and it was kind of lonely in ways, and it was bittersweet, but it definitely was the start of a new chapter in our lives. And, you know, we didn't really grow up around young kids or anything like that, so it was the first time in our lives where this little bundle of joy had come into our lives, and he was so innocent, and he hadn't been exposed to any of the, I suppose, heartbreak that there had been in our family. And it totally was just like turning a page, a new leaf for our family. And I think we all, I suppose, maybe felt the necessity to kind of protect him from that, and to give him a lovely childhood and happiness and fun. And like, he does that for us as well. Sure, he doesn't even know he's doing it, but he makes us happy. And my brother's just recently had a little boy, Tig, as well. So, you know, I think the last 2-3 years have totally changed our family around.
Now, if you want to get in contact with me throughout the show with any questions or requests, you can contact me through my Instagram, enoconnell321, or drop me an email on my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. We're going to go for a very quick ad break. Don't go anywhere. Lots more to come. We'll be back after these.
Stand Out with Enoch O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Enoch O'Connell. I'm here today with current Rose of Tralee, Rachel Duffy. Moving on to the main part, the Rose of Tralee, what made you put your name forward for it? Obviously, you said during COVID you wanted to put yourself out there. I was reading somewhere, you only put your name forward not too long before the selection was made.
Yeah, so it had kind of been said to me a few times, and I'd always gone, absolutely not a fear of it. You wouldn't catch me dead in the Rose of Tralee. And I think maybe I just had like misconceptions about it, or I just probably, and I suppose a lot of the other girls would agree with me, we kind of all had this feeling of, oh, I'm not good enough. Yeah. I'm not perfect enough. And, you know, and now when I look back, I'm like, oh my God, that's so silly. But I think it was definitely a lack of confidence. But it had been said to me, and I was kind of had a, you know, I laughed at it. But when I said it to my friends, oh, such and such is after saying, oh, I should enter the Rose of Tralee. And my friends were all like, sure, why wouldn't you? And I was kind of like, oh. And they said, you know, and I think it was a bit of a laugh. Like, I remember my friend Michelle, and Michelle would be fond of a night out, and I remember Michelle going, sure, wouldn't it be class if you got into the Rose of Tralee, and we'd all go down to Tralee for the week. And I think that was kind of, I guess, just my friends, their attitudes towards it, them being so positive about it. I kind of thought, what for, to hell with it, so like, I'll do it. And I remember texting the girls in the Westmead Rose Centre and being like, right, when is this thing on, or what do I have to do? And I remember they were kind of like, oh yeah, you need to do the application form today. Like, if it's not in today, like, the selection is next week, so you can't do it. So I remember sitting down being like, right, we're doing it now. And I think it was one of those things, I just took a notion and I ran with it. And when I had the application form done, I said, sure, I can't take it back. Like, and I'd said it to my boss in work, Paul, laughing, and he was like, curious about it, he was like, absolutely, I'll sponsor it, you know. And then I think it was just because people had shown me a bit of, you know, support and interest. Like, I think if my friends had turned around and, you know, said, laughed at me, or, you know, made little of it, like, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah,
I think, I suppose, that's a nice reflection on the type of friends I have as well, that they're so supportive and that. But yeah, little did I know, I literally entered kind of the week just before the competition in Westmeath, and I didn't really tell anyone. I didn't want anyone really to know, because like that, it was more so a commitment I'd made to myself to try new things, and I didn't want anyone to ruin it, you know.
Yeah.
And I was even in work the night before, and it was a Friday night, I was busy in the pub, like, and I hadn't told really anyone. I'd only told my boss, Paul, knew, but I remember the Westmeath Rose Centre started putting out pictures of the girls who were signing up.
Go away.
And next thing, my boss went around kind of telling people, oh, Rachel's going for the Westmeath Rose Tralee. And I remember I nearly had like a canary in work, because I was thinking, why are you telling everyone? I don't want anyone to know. And next thing, it was in the football group chat, and the girls were all, oh, you kept this quiet. And then I was thinking, oh my God, I don't even want to do it anymore. I don't even want to do it anymore now. Everyone knows.
Your dad was on holidays, was he, when you were picked?
Holidays. So even like, I remember the day I did the application for him, he had packed up the bag and had gone to Dublin Airport. So I didn't even tell him really that I sent off the application for him. He didn't even know it was kind of happening. And I was given, I think, 15 tickets to sell for the night in Mullingar. And I remember thinking, how am I going to sell 15 tickets? I don't want anyone to know. And, you know, I kind of, my sister, my brother, my few of my aunties, and my few close girlfriends were the only people kind of that I'd invited to it. And like that, yeah, like I had a great day. I remember going in and paying 70 quid for a dress, and I was raging, like I was thinking, oh my God, this signing up to this thing now has been the biggest waste of money. Like, nearly, I was kind of going, why did I agree to this? And went over anyone, and I said, right, I'll do it, and I'll just enjoy it, and I'll make friends. And I did, and I had a great day. Like, it was a lovely like group of girls that were there for the Westmeath selection, and some of them I'm still quite close with. And I was really proud by the end of the day, before we did the kind of the stage section. I was delighted with myself that I had committed to it and I'd done it, because I suppose I would struggle a bit with anxiety, and I would be inclined to be the type of person who would go, oh no, actually no, just take me out of it, or I won't do it, or, you know, I'd always back out nearly last minute.
Yeah.
And I'm proud that I was like, no, I've done it now. And but yeah, and then we were told we were going to have something like 8 or 10 minutes on stage interviewing, and I was thinking, oh my God, what am I going to talk about for 10 minutes? So I decided I'd sing a song to break up the 10 minutes. And that's the only reason why I sang as well. And I suppose like when I'd sang in Westmeath, they then had decided that I would be singing in Tralee as well. I didn't really get much of a say in it. But yeah, like Westmeath was just so exciting. I think when I won in Westmeath, it was nearly more exciting than when I won in Tralee, because I guess it was so small, and it was just such a novelty, and it, I couldn't believe it really. And I was so proud. Like, I love being from Westmeath, and like, such a lovely way to represent your county. And from going from a few weeks beforehand of, you know, feeling probably a bit insecure about it and not knowing what to do, to having a few people encourage me and then be the other end of it and have the sash was lovely for me, because it was a real vote of confidence that I needed for myself.
When you were brought on for the main stage in Tralee, the other roses that you were, obviously there's a massive build up to it, you know, interviews and stuff. Did you build, I suppose you built a special bond with all the other roses there from all over the world as well? Are you still in contact with any of them to today?
Oh yeah, oh Jesus, I'm in contact with those women all the time.
Like,
it's but you kind of, I have to be really, because it's especially for me now, the girls are kind of the only ones who really understand what it's like, what's expected. And you know, it's really important that I have that support network there. And like, I'm so lucky, the girls, like, they're so good to me, and they're always the ones, I suppose, who have the right advice and things like that, and who always, I guess, have your back too, which is lovely. No, but like, I'm talking to the girls nearly every day. We're constantly kind of catching up with each other, you know, always on the voice notes on WhatsApp, group chats and everything, and the escorts too. And like that, if any of us are having a party or having some form of a get together, everybody gets invited. It's a really, really special kind of bond, because really you start making friends from when you're selected. Like, I was selected last April, and as soon as, I guess, every rose is picked, you know, you're in a group chat together, and we over the summer, even last year, we had multiple kind of opportunities to meet up, and
really?
You know, day where we had to go up to RTE for an interview, and those were all opportunities for us to meet with each other. We went to Gawler races together, and that was before we ever went on the Rose Tour. So by the time we'd actually gotten to the Rose Tour, we were all pretty tight anyway.
Like sisters.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose then, you know, you have to, you know, for the international roses, you kind of have to keep those in mind too, because it could be quite intimidating to be joining a group of girls who are already really tight and you've not been to any of these events. So you kind of, like, we kind of had to make sure we made a special effort then with the international girls to kind of make sure they felt in the gang too. But we had such a lovely year. Like, all of our girls are so sound, and but like that, even the Rose Tour itself, it's such kind of a bonding experience. Like, it's so unique in ways, like, it's so exhausting and fun, and there's just so much adrenaline and there's so much happening, that it's a very rare experience that only you share, so you kind of automatically are bonded for life.
That's brilliant. You know, that you make friends for life, like you said, and I think that goes for anything, even if it's young children playing in a match. You know, building friends for the future is so important. You were I think, was it a week later, was it starting your masters?
Yeah.
Was that like when Dahi called out your name? Did the masters, were they the furthest thing from the back of your head, or how did you, there was obviously masters winning the roles literally all at once?
Yeah, I think, like, because for me, I suppose, like that, I winning in Westmeath for me was such a huge deal, that throughout the Rose Tour and the lead up to the festival, like, I was just really happy to be involved. You know, I'd had a great summer at home. We were doing well in the football, we had the FLA, then I was going on the Rose Tour, and I remember after coming off the stage on the Monday night after my interview and thinking, "Oof, I'm off the hook now, I'm done, I'm out the gap." I remember being like, this was great. Now, this was a great experience, and I'm happy to wrap it all up now and go back to college next week. You know, so I was very much kind of set on the fact that I was going back to college a week later, and I had nothing really left to do. So I suppose when he called out Westmeath, I don't really know how I felt. Like, it's such a blur, like, but it kind of...
Like an out-of-body experience.
Totally. I hope I never have to feel like that again. It was just the worst fright you could possibly imagine. And, you know, it's kind of, we joke about it now, I suppose, everyone down in the office in Tralee, and that, like, that I was one of the only roses that they really weren't sure that I was going to stick with it. Do you know that kind
really?
Of, like, I was very like, oh no, like, I kind of was like, no, you must have made a mistake, like, because, you know, not me, you know. And I think it was just maybe a lack of confidence I had in myself, but I wouldn't say I'm a competitive person per se either. I tend to kind of avoid competition in that sense.
Yeah.
Like, football, I'm very much like there for the enjoyment and the fun and keeping everyone involved, like, win, lose or draw, it's not going to ruin my life or anything, do you know?
Yeah.
And so with the Rose of Tralee as well, like, I never really entertained what might happen if you won, because, like, to me, I was thinking about it realistically. Like, there's 33 girls, you know. I was kind of looking around going, through all of them are incredible, you know.
All of their own talents.
Totally. And everyone was kind of so different in their own ways too. So to me, I was very much like, whichever girl now gets this, geez, she'll have her work cut out for her and she'll be great. And, you know, so I just didn't think it was going to be me. And I guess that initial shock, I think it definitely took me a few months to probably accept it. I think it nearly till Christmas to actually accept it. But in, I suppose, even in hindsight now, like, if I compare myself now to myself when I'd won, like, I've totally transformed as a person. So I guess, you know, it probably was for the best in the end that I did win, but at the time I wasn't sure if it was.
Definitely brought on the self-confidence. Now we're going to go for a very quick ad break. Don't go anywhere. Lots more to come. We'll be back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, here on Radio Kerry. I'm here today with current Rose of Tralee, Rachel Duffy. I remember when you were on Radio Kerry, I think it was the morning after, they were you were talking about the tiara, and you made a good point that even for younger girls growing up, that you don't need a tiara to be beautiful, and you know, just because you don't have the tiara, it doesn't matter. Do you think that for young girls these days, do you think growing up in a social media world, them comparing themselves to, I suppose, this top model in America or the Kardashians, do you think that it is kind of going that way, that girls are, they're saying, I have to look like this person?
I think, and even I suppose, like, I'm only 24, so kind of, I still remember, I think, when Instagram was like made and we all made our accounts for the first time. And when I even think about the pressure we were under then, but by now, the way it has just amplified in terms of that, and like the likes of TikTok and everything else, yeah. Like, it is really, I would hate to be a teenager again.
It's sad in one way, Rachel, isn't it?
It is, and like, it's a really, like, being a teenager, it's hard enough as it is without, you know, all of this media in your face all the time telling you how to get perfect skin, how to get the perfect body, how to get perfect hair. Here's an ab workout that'll give you abs in 15 minutes, and it's not real. None of it's real. And but when you're young and you're so impressionable and you care so much about what other people think, like, I do think it's so harmful.
Did you realise, or even before you came down for the whole event, did you anticipate the, I suppose, the big crowds in Denny Street after? Because you were probably whisked away to do loads of media and stuff, were you?
Yeah, it actually was crazy. Like, I think it was just because the time of night as well. Like, to see the, like, children as well was just unbelievable. But I just was so blown away by the whole thing, because I just think it's so incredible that you do it every year. You know, the morning after, when I was in the Rose Garden and when we'd gone through Tralee, there was nothing left. There was no dirt. Yeah. That were spotless. And I just thought to myself, it's such a testament to the people who are involved and the people who are doing the work. Like, it was just incredible.
It is, and it's a great organisation. Like, and even the people that don't get the credit, you know, volunteering, and the people picking up the litter. As you said, I know Dahi. What's he like?
To be fair, he was lovely. Like, he was really, really, you could kind of tell by him, he'd such a duty of care to make sure that we were enjoying ourselves
as well.
And I think he was conscious of the fact that none of us are in show business, you know, like, we do this. And he was very much put everyone at ease. And, you know, even I remember the day that we had the Monday, we had a rehearsal that day for every rose that was going out for their interview that night. And I think because I talked a bit about my mom, I was kind of worried, I suppose, because of television, I didn't really know, was I going to be made a sob story out of or what? And, you know, I didn't want that. I wanted my mom to be brought up on my terms. And I remember being actually kind of panicked about it.
Yeah.
I remember when we had our dress rehearsal, and you get into your dress and you say, they walk you onto the stage and say, this is where you're going to stand. And Dahi's there, and he kind of runs through with you. Okay, we'll do this and we'll do that. And, you know, they're not trying to catch you out at all. Like, you're kind of happy to talk about your mom. And I said, I am, but I'm not going into, I don't want to go into detail. And I said, I just, you know, my granny is watching this at home. I don't want to upset anyone. And he was so quick to just be like, oh yeah, no, absolutely. He said, this is your night. And, you know, he said, anything you say goes. And he said, you just let me know. And he said, I'm not here to put you out or to make you feel uncomfortable. And I remember before feeling so worried that I was going to go out on stage and tell Dahi O'Shea what I was and wasn't willing to talk about, you know. But he was so, so nice about it and totally kind of put me at ease. And I just remember thinking, he is such a nice man. And I have to say, like, and all the girls will agree, he's the perfect man for the job. Like, he's really, really good.
He is. Every year he does something different. It was the red boots one year. Was it the ice bath the year you were in it?
Yeah, he did the ice bath last year with Ashley. Yeah.
That was hilarious. Like you said, he's so down to earth. He'd do anything, I'd say, you know, for the night.
Yeah, yeah. He's happy to kind of have the, I suppose, he's happy to have everyone laugh at him as opposed to the I think is really, really nice.
Do you want to tell me a bit about all the, because obviously it's like a full-time job, because you're over and back and going places every couple of days, all the engagements and stuff. What's the, I suppose the schedule is different every week, but what's it like? Did you realize how much traveling and how many different, you know, I suppose, like you said, on Radio Kerry, there was girls, your friends dropping dresses to the house for different occasions. Did you realize how much events you'd have to go up to? And does it have a toll on your, I suppose not your mental health, but your, just your body in general, like?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I definitely think, I just didn't know, I suppose. I didn't know enough about the Rose of Tralee to know what winning entails. And I suppose, but I have to say, you know, when I won, they very much told me you can be whatever type of Rose of Tralee you want to be. But I knew so little about the other side of it. And I think at the start, because I suppose I'd be a bit of a people pleaser, I was going to a lot of things and going all the time. And it was very emotionally draining.
Yeah.
Because even though I might have felt stressed and I might have been exhausted, you know, people want the Rose of Tralee. They don't want Rachel when she's tired. You have to give people the Rose of Tralee, because the bottom line is you can make someone's day. And I do think it's a responsibility, I suppose, in a sense, that I have, even though, you know, I want to enjoy myself too and everything, but ultimately you kind of, I suppose, have to make a certain level of sacrifices in order to fulfill the role. But I definitely would say there was a while there now where I was totally run off my feet, and kind of probably through no fault other than my own, because I didn't know how to say no, and I felt almost guilty if I said no to doing things.
And
you could be up in Dublin, you could be down to Tralee, you could be here, there and everywhere. And I guess it got to a point where I thought to myself, is it going to be like this all year? You know, because if it's going to be like this all year, I'm not going to be able for it. It kind of got to a stage where I realized myself, I said, Rachel, you're going to have to start saying no to things now. Otherwise, you'll be the one left, you know, in a state over this, you know. So I kind of, in fairness, grew a bit of courage to actually just say, maybe I won't do that and I'll do this. And I suppose just use the voice I have to actually advocate for myself a little bit more. And, you know, and it was never an issue really. Like, if I said it didn't suit me to go anywhere, it was just me, I guess, putting immense pressure on myself, and feeling the need to be the best version of myself and to make a good impression on people. I did get to a stage where I realized, like, there's only so much you can do. There's only so much one person can do. And I guess as well as that, I wasn't trained to do this. Like, I'm not used to working, I suppose, in the public eye, or even all the interviews and media related things. Like, I've never been trained to do this stuff. So there's that side of it too that brings can bring kind of immense stress, because you're worrying about the day where you mess up. So I got to a stage where I kind of said, look, I'm happy for things to slow down a little bit now and to take a small step back. Now, in saying that, I'm still doing multiple engagements every week, and it's probably, even people are probably still think I'm mad for doing as much as I am doing. But I think now that I have taken a bit of a step back and prioritized my own, I like to prioritize my football and my gym and my family time. And because I prioritize those things now, my Rose of Tralee events are so much more enjoyable, and they're just so much more of a novelty as well. And I like to try and get to everybody. You know, if someone asks me to come to something that doesn't suit, I'd like to get to them at a later date if I could. But I think at the start, Jesus, I was totally, totally ran off my feet and under a serious amount of stress, I think, because of the change it had brought into my life. But no more than if you had moved house or got a new job, or any big change in your life is bound to bring stress. But I think I just couldn't accept that something that was meant to be so amazing was causing me so much stress. And I think that was hard too, because everybody kept telling me, it's so incredible, it's so amazing, you must be having an amazing time. And I was thinking, why am I so exhausted by it? And why am I so angry for events and stuff? But it was just because I was doing too much. And it literally was a matter of me just slowing down. But, you know, and then there's a certain amount you do have to do. Like, some of my big, massive trips kind of take a bit of preparation as well. You know, I went to India in November with the Hope Foundation.
I've seen that actually online.
Yeah, and I think maybe that was a bit of a turning point for me at that stage, because I think up until then I was under serious kind of pressure. And I think, and I suppose a lead up to a massive trip like that would also bring its own bit of stress. But I think when I went out there and I went on my own, I remember even being on the flight over to Dubai and thinking, oh, this is so peaceful, this is so nice, nobody can get to me. And I got to Kolkata, and I think, you know, it was a total assault on my senses in every way. And God, the level of poverty that I saw, and there's no amount of preparation you can do to be ready for that.
Now we're going to go for the last outbreak of the show. Stay tuned into Radio Kerry, lots more to come. We'll be back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, the last part of the show. I'm here today with current Rosa Tralee, Rachel Duffy. Did your sister go to Uganda, Rachel, before?
Yeah, my sister went to Uganda with Nurture Africa, and my dad has actually been in South Africa with the Nile Mellon Township Trust multiple times. My dad used to go nearly every year building houses, because he used to be a building contractor. So it was always something I kind of was reared with.
It was inevitable that you'd go sometime even without the Rosa Tralee.
Yeah. And I think, you know, so I remember being small, and every time daddy'd be going to South Africa, you'd be packing up your dolls and cleaning and washing their clothes and putting them in daddy's suitcase so he could bring them out there. And then, you know, that was such a far cry from then going out to India myself and seeing the things I saw. And I think it was very strange. It was really kind of conflicting in lots of ways, because I was kind of so taken aback by how, I guess, their attitudes were to the positions that they were in. Like, they were living in poverty, but they couldn't just like lie down and be upset that they were living in poverty. Like, they got on with it. They were so happy to get their education. All the children in the Hope schools were just incredible. Like, it was so refreshing. Any of the kids, they all wanted to show off. They wanted to show you what they could do. They wanted to show you their rhymes and their dances, and they were so confident. And I guess just seeing the level of work being done over there in a place that was so overpopulated, and in ways it could seem like a drop in the ocean, but the impact it was having on you know, those people was worth it. It makes it worth it. And I suppose hopefully in a few generations, you know, you'll see that difference. But you know, you can imagine me going through the Rosa Tralee and then landing over there and then having to come home again. It was kind of one of those situations where I had a look at myself and I said to myself, you know what, you're not too badly off, you're all right, you know, you can get over yourself a little bit. And I kind of did, I think, after that. But I also did make a few changes to make my life a little bit more, I guess, less stressful. I had so much stuff and I had so many things I didn't need, and it would probably cause me stress too. And even being in India just made me realize, like, you know, my own greed and things that I could do without. And I was really glad that I went so early on in my year, because it kind of set the tone for the rest of the year to come.
It's something that I'd love to do sometimes, go out somewhere like there. Recently, was there a new ladies team founded in 2021? Is it Kil Oga, or how do you pronounce it?
Oh yeah. So that's the team I play for. So I grew up, like when I was in primary school, I would have played football in school and you'd have played with the boys. And there was no, the only ladies football club was Moat, the town there. And I suppose it's a testament to how much, you know, how far the LGFA has come and how much interest has been taken in ladies football, you know, in the space.
Brilliant.
years, you know, there's five clubs in a catchment area where there once was only one, which is just incredible. And so I used to play for Moat Ladies, and you know, I think like so many girls, you know, that kind of you drop off at so many girls just drop off for various reasons. You know, I played until I was 19, and I played in college in Galway as well, and I don't know, just for kind of different reasons, I suppose. The I didn't have any draw for football anymore. I think the fun was gone out of it for me. I was awfully hard on myself, and I didn't enjoy it, I suppose. Mm-hmm. That was the bottom line. I didn't enjoy it anymore, and I decided to pack it in. And then 2021, yeah, we were all kind of, I suppose, at home with nothing to do. And I guess there was kind of talk of a club starting here in my parish, because, you know, we'd have a men's football team that would get an awful lot of support from everyone in Rosebound. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when there was kind of talk of a ladies club starting, you know, we were all, you know, a few of us who might have quit over the last 2-3 years were kind of looking at each other going, are you going to go back? Or, you know, and sure, next thing we went back and we had over 40 girls, you know, the first few weeks coming down, and some girls had never played football again before, and some girls hadn't played in 5 or 10 years, and some girls were county level. So there was such an array of abilities there, and it was just brilliant. So 2021 was our first year as a club, and we were in the junior, obviously, and we got to the junior semi-final, and then last year was our second year and we got to the county final and we lost. So this year now we're hoping, third time lucky, we'll get up to intermediate. But look, it's incredible what it's done for our community. Because I suppose, like that, people in Rosemary are so good for coming out and supporting the lads. It's amazing to see the way they support the girls too. And, you know, it's an amalgamation of Rosemount GAA and Castledaily GAA. And it's lovely. We train in Rosemount and we train in Castledaily, but the support we get is just amazing. And it's lovely to see girls getting that support. You know, we get the gear, we get the breakfast after training, we get to use the gym. And I suppose those are things that not all ladies clubs get. So we're very, very spoilt and very, very lucky when it comes to that. So hopefully now, I suppose, with the way things are going, you know, girls might start getting the same treatment as the lads do, but we'll get there, I suppose.
Absolutely. It's great to see how far it's come on. Rachel, come here. Thanks so much for coming on today, and I really appreciate your time for telling your own story, and I know everybody will enjoy it, so thanks a million.
Thank you. Thanks a million. Thanks for having me. It was really enjoyable there.
Now, folks, unfortunately, that's all we have time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I appreciate you tuning in to me as always. I hope you're all having a good week and enjoying the bits of dry weather we're getting outside it. We're still waiting for the nice sunshine, but hopefully that'll be coming on soon. A massive thanks to Rachel for coming in today and chatting to me about her own story and what it was like winning the Rose of Tralee and opening up about her mom, and how she says that her mom helped her that night she got crowned the Rose of Tralee. And it was a very interesting interview, and I hope you all enjoyed it, because I certainly did. So a massive thanks to Rachel for that. And lastly, before we finish up tonight, I just want to say a massive best of luck to our own Kaya Flynn representing Radio Kerry, and to all the other contestants in this week's Kerry Rose selection. So the best of luck to all of them, and to our own friend here in Radio Kerry, Kaya Flynn. Stay tuned into Radio Kerry, because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next Wednesday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.